And joining me right now is Mr. Bob Luca. How's it going, my friend?
Well, not too bad, actually. It's finally getting warmer up here where I am, and actually kind of enjoyable.
Very nice. I'm glad you're enjoying the weather.
Yeah, winter's coming to an end here, and that's fine with me.
Absolutely. Well, it's a nice, sunny 66 degrees out here where I am.
Oh, boy.
I'm out here in Southern California.
Oh, you got good weather almost all the time.
All the time. That's true. So I'm spoiled by the weather, and I was just thinking about you and Betty, you know, rest in peace to her. But I was thinking about both of you, and I realized it's been a number of years since the first time you were on this program, but not exactly this program. I was doing another program, by the way, but that one came to an end. And I started doing this one, and I meant to reach out to you guys a lot sooner, and sometimes that happens in life. And that's one of my biggest regrets, by the way. Sometimes you forget, and then you go back in time, and you realize, oh my goodness, I should have said this, that, and the other. And you know how life can be, my friend.
Oh, yeah, and I also know that the time goes by very quickly.
Ooh, it does. It really does. It's,
you know,
it's the wildest thing.
I was 20. Today I'm 80.
Yeah, I know, right? Like one day you're
by quick.
Yeah, one day you're knee high to a grasshopper. The next thing you're Bigfoot.
You got it.
Oh yeah. So my friend, I just wanted to thank you tremendously for being a part of the program. Thank you for being here. It's been so long, and my goodness, are you at all even right out of the gate? I got to ask you: are you even surprised that this sort of cycle population comes and goes, and here we are yet again in 2024, and this subject is red hot again?
Yeah, because I was thinking of just being an observer, and why I've come back a bit is because on the internet and on Facebook, there's so many falsehoods, so much baloney, so many lies. I mean, boy, people can't be aware enough today.
That's true. You're right about that. 100%. But yes, these things come in cycles, and here we are yet again in the present time, and all kinds of commotion and chatter about the subject has gone mainstream yet again. And I'm pretty sure you've been following along.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Imagine.
Oh yeah, I've always followed it, even when I felt like getting out of it.
Right.
It's kind of a curse and a blessing both.
I was about to say that. I'm sure you've been through the ringer already in terms of being sought after, not only by the public, the media, but also the government, which is another thing I wanted to mention here. In my opinion, you also were a targeted individual of sorts, a victim of electronic harassment. Am I off base here?
Oh, no. They started, we were basically under surveillance from 1979 till 2004.
That's a long, long time.
And the people who were watching us, the FBI, the military, the CIA, and we had help with our finances from the IRS every year for a while.
Oof. Yeah. And also your computer was hacked the last time I had heard from you.
Well, I don't know for sure, but I think I'm the only one that caught the Department of Defense with their hand in the cookie jar, because the United States Navy Space Weapons Division hacked my computer, and 48 hours later, the United States Army hacked my computer. And the dummies, after all the surveillance, You'd think they would have known that I was a computer technician at the time, and I had some real good software which gave me the physical address of the computers, the street address, the number of the computers, the name of the operators. So when I inquired to the Department of Defense, they had no choice. They admitted that it was their computers, and they said that they would do an investigation. That was in 2004, and I'm still holding my breath waiting for that investigation.
Wow, so they have not given you an update in terms of an actual investigation. They've just been sort of stonewalling you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They had no intention. So what I did, I wrote the United States Attorney General, and they said that the computer hacking came under the jurisdiction of the FBI. So I wrote the FBI so many times asking them to do an investigation that they started to send my certified mail back unopened.
Oh, my.
I guess I got under somebody's skin.
Yeah. You made someone angry out there. They were like thinking, oh, no, not him again.
Well, you know, it's funny in a way, but it isn't.
Yeah.
That is against the law. And they had time to investigate one sports team hacking another sports team's computer. But yet when my computer is hacked by the Department of Defense, they don't want to know.
Right. That's it's one of these things that it's one of these things that the government will probably never really disclose. And we've been seeing it right now going on in real time. Lots of whistleblowers of sorts. And I use quotation marks around that. I'm a little skeptical, but go ahead, my friend.
Well, let me tell you a little about the FBI. To start at the beginning, when the first book came out, 1979, I noticed black, unmarked Huey UH-1 helicopters were flying over our house quite frequently and quite low. So I wrote to Raymond Fowler, who was the author of the first five books.
Good book, by the way.
And he was the international director of MUFON before he got involved with doing these books. And he said, well, you're probably in some kind of flight path. He says, I wouldn't worry about it. Well, a year later, we moved to another town and another house. And we weren't there a week when these flights started again. And they were so low at times I could have hit them with a baseball. No lie. At the time, I was taking my own pilot lessons for a pilot's license. So I got the approximate altitude, the compass heading, the time of day, and I went to the Federal Aviation Administration, General Aviation District office in Boston. And even though I sent pictures, clear photographs, they said, well, we can't identify these helicopters. So I'm thinking, well, what the hell? You know, they're in our airspace and the FAA don't know who they belong to. But anyways, I wrote to the CIA, I wrote to the FBI, Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the Air Force, the Army. Nobody could tell me whose helicopters those were. They were flat black. And they appeared to have no markings on them, which is illegal. They all have to have tail numbers. Later I learned, when I got close enough to one on the ground, that the tail numbers were also in black, just about a shade different than the body. So if you're more than like 30 feet away, you can't see them. It looks like there's no ID numbers on them. But I had a fellow from the Federal Aviation Administration so interested. He said on the phone, he said, that sounds like a CIA operation.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what the hell? Why would they be involved with us?
Yeah.
Well, he came all the way down from Boston on a Saturday to my house, and I wasn't home. But he left a note on the door. So on Monday, I call there, and I ask for him. And I'm told he has been transferred. He's not here. I said, well, where is he? Oh, we don't know. So, you know, I got stonewalled there too. And it's not the first or last time.
Right.
But then shortly after we started the helicopter stuff, I found out we were under surveillance by the FBI. Because when we'd go out, we started to be followed. And I mean, in Florida, in New Hampshire, in Connecticut. And they made a little mistake there because when I was a young person,
sure,
I built hot rods and I used to be a street racer. So several times I was able to get behind the cars that were following us, and I gave them to the license plate numbers to Police Lieutenant Larry Fawcett, who was also a UFO investigator. And when he ran the plates, they came back unissued. So, you know, it's not your next door neighbor driving cars with plates that are unissued.
Correct.
And then
that's pretty
the icing on the cake. One night, Betty and I, neither one of us liked cold weather. So about 1 o'clock in the morning, we were living in Connecticut then, and we said, yeah, the heck with this. It was winter, freezing cold. So I went over to my friend's house about 1:30 in the morning. He had a big yard, and he let me park my camp trailer there. We hooked up the camp trailer, and off we go to Florida without telling anybody. Well, that was on early Sunday morning. And Wednesday, two FBI agents show up at my work with photo ID, and they want to know where I am. Well, now finally, we got proof of who it is that's looking for us. So when we got back to Connecticut, and my boss, my supervisor said, hey, he says, there's two FBI guys in here looking for you. So I said, okay. So the next day, I took off from work, went down to the federal building in New Haven, Connecticut, and we went to the secretary's desk. I said, I need to talk to an agent. They told us, take a seat. And finally, an agent came out, and I said, well, my boss tells me that two of your fellow people were down looking for me. I said, well, here I am. What would you like? And he said, well, we can neither confirm nor deny that we were there, even though I got the signed statements from my coworkers. He said, we can neither confirm nor deny that we were there looking for you, whatever. I said, okay. So while we're there, I said, while I'm here, why are you guys tapping our telephone?
Great question, yeah.
And yeah, because the phone was tapped almost from the time the books came out. So he said, well, he said, we always get blamed, but in your case, it's not us, it's Air Force Intelligence. And I tended to believe that because Betty and Barney Hill found their phone had been tapped by nearby Pease Air Force Base. So I think he was probably pretty much correct there. More than likely, it was the Air Force.
Understand.
And then at that time, oh yeah, I left out something. When we moved to the house in Cheshire, Connecticut, Betty and I were at the attorney's doing the closing. And we took our two girls to school in Cheshire, Connecticut, and we said, when you get out, go to the new house and just wait until we get there. Well, we got done with the closing. We got to the house, and the house is wide open. The girls are inside. So I said, well, you know, how'd you guys get in? We didn't even have the key then. They said, oh, the people from the telephone company were here.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm thinking, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Telephone company? I think not.
Right.
But apparently what happened later led me to believe they bugged the house because they pretty much knew where we were at
all
times.
All the time, yeah.
And I'm going to give you an example to knock your socks off.
I'm all ears.
We had a friend in Connecticut, and she was a psychologist. And she asked us if we would give a private talk at her home. So we said, sure. She said, it's a small gathering, maybe about 20 people, something like that. So Betty gave her talk on her experiences. and I started to talk about the helicopters. No sooner did I start to talk, and you hear this wop, 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 very unmistakable sound of a Huey UH-1 rotor blades. And they pulled back the curtains, and a Huey UH-1 circled the house at low altitude. The prop wash was bending the trees. That's how low they were. And I thought, well, that's a heck of a thing, but probably coincidence. About a month later, we're doing a lecture in New Britain, Connecticut for a dentist in a private group.
Right.
Betty finished her talk. I started mine on the helicopters. All of a sudden, wop, 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 wop. Huey shows up and circles the house. Well, no, it can't be coincidence. So somebody, not only did they know where we were, apparently they could hear. And I know how they did, but I'll mention that later.
Right,
so after that,
right,
we were doing another private lecture for a building contractor in Meriden, Connecticut. I'll be a son of a gun. Betty finished her talk. I started on the helicopters, and sure enough, it showed up. Okay, here's where I'd like to tell you how. There is a movie called Blue Thunder. And in that movie, they show technology that is in these helicopters. And they said at the beginning of the movie, everything you see as far as the technology in these helicopters is in use today. Number one, they have what they call whisper mode, where they can angle the blades so you don't hear them. Number two, they have thermography, where they can look right through the roof and walls of your house. And number three, they have shotgun microphones that can pick up a normal voice at 3,000 feet in the air. So I gather that's how they knew, when Betty finished her talk and when I started mine.
Right.
And by the way, believe it or not, it's from the 80s.
Absolutely. And by the way, I just want to quickly mention that it's actually called the Military Entertainment Complex, by the way. As they are involved they're involved in cinema and multimedia as well. So
awesome.
Yeah, so they're involved in a lot of the movies you see, and there's a long list of movies that the military has been involved with, and the DOD has a lot of contractors out there. Movies like Air Force One, Apollo 13. Deep Impact, Black Hawk Down.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, there's a long list of movies, like Top Gun. These are all movies that incorporated a lot of things from the military. And even the movie like Transformers also involved with the film. And these things are pretty well documented as well. So I'm not surprised to hear that at all, by the way. That would make sense.
Another incident. Betty was parked. I parked my car in front of a sporting goods store, and Betty was sitting in the car. And while I was in the store, a helicopter came up and silently hovered over the store. I was buying a AR-15 at the time. And all the while I was in there, the helicopter hovered over the store. And thank goodness, across the street was a reporter for the local Meriden newspaper. And he came over and verified to Betty that he had seen it too. So that was kind of nice to have a little backup, so to speak.
Absolutely,
but
absolutely.
You don't know me, but I've got a heck of a sense of humor.
I know. I remember. I remember the first time talking to you. I could tell you did have a bit of a sense of humor, and as do I. So you're in the right place.
Well, I had a friend. We'll call him Tommy.
Right.
He was in the military, and he knew the problems I was having with these helicopters. He built me an exact full-size replica of a surface-to-air missile.
Ah.
And I thought, wow, this is great. So one Saturday morning, Betty and I are sitting home, and the helicopters, for some reason, always approached our home from the north. And I had flown over the house myself, so I knew what they would see and when they would see it. So we set up this missile on a cement pad and back. Betty and I run out back on the south side of the house. when that helicopter cleared the roof line, he cut and took an evasive maneuver. I thought he was going to pull the blades off the helicopter. That helicopter went sideways and did a U-ey to go back in the direction he came from. And I said, you know, I told Betty, I said, but that guy's going back for a shower and maybe change his underwear when he gets there. I think we put a good scare into him.
Absolutely. And by the way, I feel like I kind of feel like we jumped ahead. Because I feel like we need to say this really quickly here, as the Betty Andreessen affair, as they like to call it, this is one of the most documented and believable cases of all times, and one of the most famous abduction cases of all time. And most of the veterans...
There were a total of six books written. Ray Fowler wrote five. And Betty and I wrote a sixth book, and it was called The Lifting the Veil, where we gave a more personal aspect of our lives, you know, while we're going through this.
Right.
And both of those, The Andreessen Affair and Lifting the Veil, are still on sale today on Amazon if anybody's interested. But Betty's case was so complex and so involved, I can't, you know, I can try to talk about it, but I can't remember all the details. She was taken so many places. She was given so much information. She would get, how can I say, she would get messages telepathically and write them down wherever we were. She'd grab a piece of paper and a pen and she'd write them down, you know, so there's probably a couple hundred of them. And the interesting thing is, when we lived in Cheshire, Connecticut, when she'd start to get a message, shortly thereafter, a helicopter would fly over and a connection would be broke between her and whoever was sending the message.
Yeah. Now that's interesting.
Well, one time she was... We had a 30-foot camp trailer, and we were in a campground, and she was visited during the day while I was at work. And the interesting thing is, the being told her, she said that there were too many ears listening, and he took something out of a pouch that he had and spread it in the air. It was all sparkly so that whoever was listening could not listen. And the interesting thing is, when I was working as an automotive technician, I got home and I smelled something familiar. It's burnt insulation. So I said, what the heck? So we were on the campground's water supply. So the switch for our water supply in the trailer, I had taped in the off position so nobody would turn it on by accident. Yet what happened was, when I looked into it, the wiring to that switch and the water pump was all burnt. The insulation was all melted off it. And that wasn't the end of the story. There was two big oak or maple trees over the trailer where it was parked. The top of the leaves turned brown and the bottom was still green. So the only people we could get a hold of at the time were two electrical engineers. And they came up, they looked at everything, and they said that the best they could come up with was some type of electromagnetic pulse that could have done that. So, you know, that's the best explanation they could come up with.
Right.
Well, we ran into that again. We were at Lake Worth, Florida, a campground. We were going to Pompano, and usually I drove all there one shot from Connecticut to Pompano, but this time there was accidents, there was construction, there were hours and hours on the road, and I got tired. I said, look, I'm going to stop here at Lake Worth. There was a campground, and we were just in our car, but we had a hatchback that the seats folded down and all so you can make a bed. And I said, we'll stay at the campground tonight, you know, get up, get a shower, have breakfast, and start fresh in the morning. Well, it turned out to be quite a night. first off, when I came into the campground to pay for the lot,
right,
people were talking about a UFO who was seen the
already
night before in the area.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
I did not get involved in the conversation because I was tired.
You know, that reminds so me really, that reminds me really quickly. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you mentioned Betty Hill earlier.
Oh, Betty Hill was such a sweet lady. That,
right.
Something else again, but we did get to meet her, and she was just the nicest person. I believe everything, you know, that they said they experienced.
One thing I was going to mention here, because you said out in the woods, I'm not sure if you know this, but from what I recall, Betty Hill actually saw a Bigfoot, by the way.
I wasn't aware.
That's pretty wild, I know. Not a lot of people know that, but I was going to say there's some sort of a strange connection between UFOs and Bigfoot, apparently. There's a lot of sightings of Bigfoot around UFOs. They see a UFO in the sky, and wouldn't you know it, there's a Bigfoot nearby.
Okay, well.
There's a bit of a weird connection there.
Florida, there was an Indian medicine man doing a radio show. And I called in and I asked him what his thoughts were on just that, UFOs and a Bigfoot. And he said, in their culture, they say that the Bigfoot was dropped off by silver, shiny discs.
Ah.
And this was a medicine man.
Interesting.
And that's what he told me. So, yeah, it is all tied in. Getting back to Florida.
Yes, sir, Florida.
Okay, we pull into the parking lot, and you know, Florida, everything's a grid, east, west, north, south.
Yeah.
My compass is pointing directly north. My radio is right in time with the radio station. Okay, we sack in for the night, and about, I don't know, about 1 o'clock, I wake up, I need to use the restroom, which is about 20 yards away, maybe. I go to the restroom and I come back, and there's a black Cadillac parked behind us at a 90-degree angle. And I thought, well, somebody must be trying to beat the campground or something. I don't know. As I approach the left rear of the Cadillac, I notice it's got yellow, it's got New York plates on it. Okay. I'm walking by, all four doors open at once, exactly. And these four guys hop out, and this is going to sound weird, but I swear to God, it's the absolute truth. They were all dressed in black, white shirts, black ties, a rimmed hat, your typical men in black, I guess. They all looked Asian, and they stared at me. Well, I'm walking by the car and I'm staring at them, and there was no fear because these guys were so skinny, it looked like a good wind could have picked them up and taken them all away.
Oh, wow.
But as I pass the front of the car, they walk around the car from the ones on the driver's side walk to the passenger side and so on, like musical chairs. They get back in the car and they close all the doors at once. There's only one sound. So I'm just thinking, wow, these guys are weird, whoever they are.
Yeah.
I get back in the car, go to sleep. Now we get up in the morning. My electronic compass is no longer pointing north. It's pointing almost east.
Hmm.
And my radio is 20 minutes faster. I mean, my clock is 20 minutes faster than the radio station. So again, we got electrical engineers, and they said the same thing. This is some type of magnetic pulse. But, I mean, it still leaves you without answers.
That's pretty interesting that you mentioned that, yes. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you was, do you feel like you were supposed to almost meet your former wife?
Mm.
I mean,
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the question.
I said, do you think possibly perhaps you and Betty were supposed to meet in this in their sort of journey in life.
No doubt about it.
I mean, you guys have such an interesting story, by the way. You guys you grew up not so far from each other, and both of you had a very early onset experience. I know she was only, 2-3 years older than you were, and you guys lived not far from each other, and both of you had these really, really pretty wild experiences so early on in life, and I just wonder if perhaps you guys were destined to meet in this lifetime.
Oh, it was arranged. Betty was 2 years older than me. She had her first encounter at 7. I had mine at 5. She had her first major encounter in 1967. I had my first major encounter in 1967. In 1978, we were both abducted together. But here's the thing. In 1977, I was a single guy. And
right.
A friend of mine asked me to take a trip around the country. He was looking for work. He wasn't happy with what was going on in Connecticut. So I said, I was a very conscientious worker. I can't take off a month. And I said, my boss would kill me. He says, come on, you got to go. So I told my boss, I said, I want a month off. I was a service manager at that time for a car dealership. He says, no, I can't give you a month off. So I thought about it over the weekend. I came in Monday and I said, Bob, his name was Bob too. I said, Bob, I said, I can quit. You can fire me, but I'm taking a month off. So he gave in and he gave me the month off. Well, Eddie, my friend and I had been all around the country. And we're in Alabama, we're in Texas, we're in Oregon, we're all over the place. And we're coming back and he says, you know, it's kind of cold here. We got a little time to spare. Let's go to Florida. So we went to Florida, and Eddie had a sister-in-law there. So we went to her place, and she had a good-sized yard. We were able to park our trailer on her yard, in her yard. And the second night we were there during supper, the subject of UFOs came up. And she said, oh, I know this lady that's had a UFO experience. So I said, oh, my God, I'd love to talk to her. Because I had had that, my 67 experience, and I never told anyone except my parents and my best friend. Because I thought at that time, they'd probably put me in a loony bin.
Right. At that time, you didn't really want to talk. At this point
She told me where Betty was working, and I went down to see her. And I'll be a son of a gun. Ray Fowler told her, don't talk to any reporters, because he was working on the first book at that time. Well, she didn't want to talk to me. She didn't want to know. I said, oh my God, I turned on all the charm I could and whatnot. And, you know, Mr. Nice Guy, and please. Well, I made a date with her the next day to take her out for lunch. And as it turned out, I bought her lunch every day after for the next 45 years.
That's hilarious.
It was definitely arranged because, she was in Connecticut. I was in Connecticut. She was in Massachusetts. And I had driven over 6,000 miles by the time I met her.
Wow.
It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I meet her in Florida. And I don't know. It just, we hit it off right away.
Right.
And she changed my life because I'll tell you, I probably shouldn't say that. Well, what the hell? I was not a real nice guy before I met Betty. Fooled around with a lot of married women and stuff like that.
That's life, though.
She straightened my fanny out in short order.
It happens.
And she changed my life. She changed my life totally. And I can never thank her enough for that.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you here was, and I don't really hear too much about it, is Becky.
Yes. Becky had a number of encounters. She had implants, and she could write the alien language. She could sit down and write pages of it, just like you or I might write a normal paragraph in English.
Right.
And she could only interpret some of it. Unfortunately, you know, she couldn't read off everything she wrote.
Yeah.
And she passed away, too, before
Betty. Yeah. Rest in peace to her, too.
You know, it was sad. Betty had 7 children, and there's only three left. It's just, you know, kind of, you don't figure the kids are going to pass before the parents.
Absolutely. And that's always a tragic thing. And by the way, have they contacted you in terms of any of these, this subject matter?
Had who contacted me?
About this, though, in terms of, you know, like UFOs and that sort of deal.
No, they put us, the reason we were under surveillance, we offered in the beginning to sit down and talk with anybody from government.
Right.
And they blew us off.
Yeah.
But what they did, we were under surveillance. The phone was tapped, the helicopters, the cars that followed us. They even went so far as to put a platform in a tree outside of our house. And they had somebody up there from time to time monitoring our house so that if these aliens showed up or anything, they would be there. And I caught them on my scanner radio because I don't know what you know. Well, a scanner radio, let's say you got 1,000 to 1,300 megahertz. The scanner radio picks up everything in between. But the government makes them put in blocking diodes to block out the government channels. Well, I'm just bright enough to have found them and cut the blocking diodes out. And I could hear him one day. This guy is in he says, Johnny, it's pretty tiresome being up in this tree here and he's cursing and whatnot. And I say, my God, that's an awful strong signal. This must be pretty close. But I never realized it was our house until we moved and saw the platform up in the tree outside. We got assertive because we were warned that Dr. Hynek warned Betty. He said, look, he said, stick to philosophy, leave the military out of this.
Interesting.
And at the time, I was writing freedom information requests as fast as I could write them. I was calling the Pentagon. I called Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I made a real test of myself. And, of course, nobody would give you any answers. But one of the funnier things, we were at NASA in Florida at the Space Center. And we stopped and talked to the guard. We told him that we were writing a book on space, and we'd like to interview the administrator. Well, he called down, and the administrator was in his office, and he said, he will talk to you. Fine. It was quite a long walk to his office from where we talked to the guard station. When we got down to his office, we were met by a secretary that said, oh, he's not here. Well, the guy disappeared kind of quickly. But we took the initiative, and he backed off. I also had called the CIA, and I told them I want to do an interview with him, and they turned me down flat, no reason. I said, you know, I said, that's why people out here don't trust you. You know, they wouldn't, right. No way would they do an interview or
to
me.
Yeah.
And it on tape. When I had talked to people at the Pentagon, I was told, nobody here will talk to you. And this I have on tape. So, you know, I just had a thirst for information. And I was so frustrated because anywhere I went in government, you're just stonewalled. They give you nothing.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's the case. That's the case, unfortunately. And lots of times people are led to believe that some of these people that we vote for, allegedly, they're going to reveal some sort of info about X, Y, and Z, but that never ends up happening. I mean, we still don't even know what happened to JFK officially from our own government.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I mean, don't hold your breath. We're never going to find out. They're never going to release it. Probably in another 50 years, maybe from now. I have no idea, but it doesn't really seem like.
Absolutely.
There's no urgency at all. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you my theory, what I've found from my research and what I believe. All right. First off, I was working in Florida as a hydrogen fuel research technician.
Yeah, that's right.
The company I work for developed a unit for the home that would make electricity, heat, and hot water and absolutely zero pollution. The prototypes have been tested and retested, and we're ready to go into production. Well, one day, in pops representatives from ExxonMobil. And we thought they were just curious or whatever, didn't think a whole lot of it. A month later, we go into work and we're told to go to the Ramada Inn, this conference room. We go there and we were met by attorneys from ExxonMobil. We all got the boot. We all had a signed non-disclosure unit. And that was it. We all got canned that day. And here's what I feel is the real.
If you want to continue listening to this interview, please go to patreon.com/Michael Deacon. I know, I apologize.